create a gritty team of advisors. You're starting to recognize the kind of people you want to surround yourself with and take advice from. Good, because you're going to need them. When I started my business in 1995, I was told not to trust anyone. I was told things like, only one hand works the register, and only you handle the books. It was due to this poor advice and thinking that I didn't trust anyone. I never hired a great accountant, lawyer, insurance agent, or business advisor. I thought I could and should do it all on my own. Wrong. Sure, it was good that I developed my skills in those areas, like we discussed above. But it wasn't good that I was missing out on having strong advisors, and my business was suffering for it. I needed a strong team of advisors to support me and my business, and so do you. These people are on your team to make you better. They work for you, and they must have your best interest in mind. Even if you aren't in business for yourself, it's still a good idea to get a team of advisors together. You never know when or why you might need them. Here are the players to select for your team: an accountant, a lawyer, an insurance agent, a finance partner, and a mentor. Number one, accountant. Everyone needs this person. It is your duty to pay your taxes, but not a penny more than you should. You need a good accountant, either on staff or at an outside company, to help you manage your income, expenses, profits, and taxes. Find a good accountant. Update them every month and keep accurate books. Equally as important is that your accountant makes recommendations for you. He or she must be a gritty, out-of-the-box thinker if they are going to help you maximize your profits. I want everything you do to be 100% above board, but a gritty accountant knows how to deploy strategies that can help you drive your financial success into the proper lower tax and higher profit zone. Number two, insurance agent. Your insurance agent must be an expert in your industry because they should be making recommendations to protect you. Ask about types of general liability, product liability, life insurance, health insurance, downtime coverage, breakdown coverage, gap insurance, and even disability insurance. Make sure you have enough coverage so that your assets are protected in case of disaster. This is still important if you're an employee to make sure you're fully covered outside of what your company might offer. Number three, lawyer. You don't need a nice lawyer. You need a tough, nasty, gritty lawyer. Your lawyer is going to do the dirty work for you when called upon, and you don't want a wimp. You need someone willing to be tough and demanding. Be proactive in finding the right lawyer. Have a good lawyer lined up and build a relationship with them so that if and when an issue arises, you can call them and they will already know you and your situation. Number four, finance partner. Build a relationship with your banker or finance partner before you need them. You want your finance partner, if needed, to issue credit and/or advice quickly. You need to prepare for this in advance. A finance partner can be your banker or an independent finance company. Either way, you need them to understand your situation and offer quality recommendations and be able to pull the approved trigger when you need it most. This is still a good idea if you're an employee in case a side opportunity arises that you need to act fast on. Number five, mentor. We already discussed this, but I want to stress how important this is. You need to find someone in your industry who has accomplished what you want to accomplish. Get to know them and develop a relationship with them. These types of people can be key in offering guidance and industry-specific support. Additionally, your mentor should have contacts in the industry. They might help you find a new and better job if you're an employee. This is critical, as mentors can also help you with introductions to other successful people. You should speak with all the members of your team once a quarter. Whether you need them or not, make a call to them every few months and give them a status update to keep your business or work life running smoothly. Keeping a few trusted advisors will put you in a good place if and when you need help, recommendations, and gritty advice. Action steps. Connect with game facers. Make a list of game facers you know. You don't have to know them personally yet, but make a list of people whom you want to get closer to. Make the call. Call your list of game facers and set up 10-minute appointments with them. It can be via phone or in person, but you want 10 minutes of their time to ask them to become your mentor. Make a new connection today. Start the process of building your team today. Is there someone you look up to or admire for their skills, their grit, or just for their sheer success? Good. Ask them for the name and number of their attorney, accountant, insurance agent, and banker. Then go so far as to ask them if you can take them to lunch once a quarter for mentoring advice. Chapter 7. Step 4. Skill up. Going deep and narrow. I recently returned from a trip to Cuba. I was fortunate to get an inside view as Cuba reforms itself in the post-Castro regime. Cuba may be one of the most exciting stories of the next decade. Located just 90 miles off the coast of the United States, it's like a time warp going 50 years into the past. Prior to the 1959 Castro Revolution, Cuba was an extremely exciting country. In fact, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, 1870 to 1910, Cuba was one of the wealthiest countries on the planet, primarily because of sugarcane. It's what created the opulent lifestyle and iconic Art Deco architecture that fills the country. When you look at Cuba today, you see that opulence and despair, waiting to be rescued. Although Cuba still has some of the most gorgeous buildings you've ever seen, most are dilapidated and falling down. For entrepreneurs, this is a sight to behold. Entrepreneurs look at Cuba like a lion looks at raw meat. Somebody has to take advantage of the opportunities that have opened up there. As Americans, we see the incredible upside. Americans think everyone wants what we want, but I met with Cuban entrepreneurs who assured me that this was not the case. They don't want the American lifestyle. They love their country, their culture. They even love their government. What they really want from an entrepreneurial standpoint is the internet. They want to build their lifestyle by design, and to them, unlimited access to the internet is the answer. When we talked about how Americans use the internet, the Cuban entrepreneurs laughed. They said, "Americans use the internet wide and shallow. We want to use the internet deep and narrow. We want to learn how to program video games, how to master the art of app building. We want the internet in order to become masters of our own destiny." We can all learn from this because they're right. We're busy sharing photos and watching cat videos, and Cubans want nothing to do with that. It's wasteful to them. Their limited access to the internet focuses them to make the most of it. We could learn a lesson from the Cubans about becoming specialized. We have become a society of wide and shallow, where very few go deep and narrow. We want all of it at very low levels. That's why when it comes to money, we never really make enough to make a difference in net worth. If you want to make more money, go deep and narrow. In other words, find a niche. Niches are hard to figure out because we're afraid that if we pick one niche, we limit ourselves or are protecting ourselves from making a wrong decision. But not picking a niche is the wrong decision. Why you need to find your niche. The business marketplace today is cloudy and crowded. For example, got an idea to start a hamburger joint that serves cheap food fast? Try again. Want to serve gourmet coffee in a white cup with a logo and charge $5 a serving? Good luck. Because so many business ideas and concepts are in place already, you need to work hard to find your niche. People in business who try to do everything for everyone don't make it anymore. Only deep and narrow works today. You need to have a niche in your life that separates you from the competition. Once you've found your niche, you need to market yourself as the expert in the niche so you can be noticed. When I started my first business, I knew that there was money in the equipment finance industry. I realized very early on that large banks and finance companies loved financing new commercial fleet vehicles. At the time, I didn't understand the concept of finding my own niche, so I created my first company, Commercial Fleet Financing Incorporated, CFF, to focus on financing new commercial fleet vehicles. I was up against huge publicly traded companies, and I didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. After a few years of failing to gain traction and growth, I realized I needed to rethink my strategy in order to survive. I looked at my happiest clients and my most profitable deals and realized that they all had one thing in common: used equipment. The banks thought that low-level operators bought used because that was all they could afford, but the reality was that my best credit customers bought only used equipment. Bingo! Opportunity just created itself. What the good credit customers realized was that their customers didn't care whether the equipment was new and shiny or from a few years ago. Our customers knew what their customers wanted, and that was on-time delivery of product. Find a problem in your industry to solve. Where do you go looking for a niche? The best way to distinguish yourself and gain traction towards success is to help solve a problem in your industry. Once you've used the litmus test to pick the platform that will help you achieve your lifestyle by design, you need to identify the most pressing problems affecting that industry. Some of these will be bigger than others, but they all have opportunities to be solved by someone, and that someone can get rich doing it. The idea is to find your niche by identifying the right problem and creating a solution to solve it. I found my niche by understanding a big problem in the transportation industry, which led me to build the company that got me out of broke and into rich. Here's how I did it. Shortly after I started CFF, the price of new equipment began to escalate, but the economics of the business was slow to catch up. Let's use a typical example. We love to finance tow trucks. Large or small, we love them all. At CFF, we believe that as the population grows, more cars, whether gas or electric or self-driving, will hit the roads. More cars will create more breakdowns and accidents, so a tow truck will always be needed in the marketplace. Therefore, the financing of tow trucks will always be needed. We observed that even if a tow truck that used to cost $50,000 now costs $100,000, the towing company wouldn't be able to double their prices. So we solved the problem by specializing in used equipment to allow our towing customers to maintain their profitability without doubling their prices. It played right into our hands. With a little research and analysis of a problem, we identified and occupied a new niche in the marketplace. When it became clear to me that my competition, large publicly traded banks, didn't want to finance used equipment, in that moment, my narrow niche was born. I decided CFF would be the best used equipment financing company on the planet. Although we still finance new equipment, CFF is now known as a leader in used equipment financing. Understanding our niche and marketing ourselves as the expert in this niche saved my business. You need to find the same type of niche for your business. The key to winning business in a niche market is twofold. Number one, become an expert in your niche. To become an expert, skill up. We'll get into this in the next chapter. And cover all of your bases in your chosen niche. This may require additional licenses, bonds, certifications, ratings, and background checks. Customers will pay for expertise. But you have to do the work first because they can see a phony coming from a mile away. It's worth it to do the work because as an expert, you can charge more and will be paid more. Remember, amateurs get crushed and experts get paid. Make sure you're choosing a niche based on skills you have or can attain. Number two, market yourself as the expert. It's not enough to just be an expert in your niche. You need to own it and market yourself as an expert. Everything you do, from your business cards, email signature lines, media materials, brochures, websites, social media, and even the sign on your door, must tell the marketplace that you are an expert. The best customers are not looking for what you are selling. They are looking for your expertise. To find your niche, ask yourself these questions. What's an unsolved problem or an underserved market in my industry? Why do my best customers do business with me? What are my competitors not doing that I can do? Can I be better than the current players? Is this niche a flash in the pan or a long-term career or business? Pick a niche, market yourself as the expert in this niche, and continue to look for new opportunities within the niche. Money follows skills, and skills are your responsibility. So let's say you've identified a problem in your industry that you want to solve and have decided to go deep and narrow on it. How do you develop the skills to do it? Contrary to popular belief, if you are employed by a company, that company has no responsibility to develop your skills. I'm constantly asked by new people who come to apply for a position with my company, what sort of training do you offer? The answer is always the same. I'm not in the training business. I'm in the equipment financing business. My job is not to hire you and then train you. My job is to hire highly skilled equipment financing pros with an existing book of business who like my company culture and my compensation plan more than that of their current employer. The goal is to provide an opportunity that allows people with desire, smarts, and ambition to thrive. In order to accomplish this, I do provide extensive sales training via the best sales training program on the planet, Cardone University, and a video-based sales training manual on how my business and industry works. Between our company videos and our YouTube channel, we have more than 1,000 videos on YouTube that cover just about any subject in my industry you could imagine. But anyone in my business will have to put in the work. I don't pay people to watch videos, read books, and get motivated. I pay people to produce. If you get hired, you get all the tools to make you successful. We pay tens of thousands of dollars a year for these tools, but it is your responsibility to use them and skill yourself up. As my friend Brad Lee, founder of Lightspeed VT, says best, I can save you from drowning, but you have to swim to me. Understand that your employer is paying you to bring your value to the company, not your lack of skills. So it's your job, not your employer's, to make sure you are skilled up. Recently, I walked by Lucy, one of the receptionists at my company, leaning back in her chair, looking at her Facebook account when I walked by. I asked her, "Are you busy?" She said, "Not right now, just waiting for the phone to ring." Wrong answer. I stopped what I was doing and I asked her to come into my office for a little talk. Lucy was a single mother who needed more time, more freedom, more skills, and damn sure more money. She knew it and so did I. But despite knowing this, she just wasn't pushing herself to bring more value. She and everyone around her knew that she was falling behind at work and financially, but she couldn't find a way to take action and make a change. You may be a single mom who needs more money, and you know it too. Everyone around you knows it, including your friends and your children. Deep down, late at night, you know you have more to give, but you just haven't made the connection yet between working and adding value. Added value is your insurance policy. When you do something better than anyone else in your company or your industry, you will make more money. But if you're waiting for someone else to make it happen for you, I want you to know that no one has that responsibility. It's up to you. If you have a job in which you have downtime, you have the perfect opportunity to skill up. Someone else is paying you to learn. But perhaps you think someone else is paying you for your hours or your time, and therefore you're just milking the clock. That's the worst possible attitude you could have. It's the complete opposite of what you should think. You should be thinking, how did I get so lucky to be a receptionist who has enough free time during the day that I can get paid to develop my skills? I asked Lucy to commit to me that she would use any downtime she had to skill up. She agreed and followed my advice. From that moment on, whenever she had downtime, I would see her walking around the office asking people if she could shadow them. She would ask people in various departments, "Could you show me how you do that?" And our team would happily oblige. She quickly came to understand our business and successfully transferred to our operations department at a pay scale 50% higher than that of a receptionist. Whether you are a receptionist or a general manager, it's time for you to get to work at skilling up. You know what you're good at, so why not skill up and get to the next level? Sure, it's good to learn about every aspect of your business and industry, but only to help you become better at your job in your niche. It's obvious that the best in every industry make the most money, so don't worry about what you suck at. Worry about maxing out your superpower. Working on improving your weaknesses has limited value. I suggest you find what you're already doing well and focus your attention on turning that skill into your superpower. By working on what you're good at, you have the potential to become extraordinary. Every industry is a great industry for the top 1%. If you're the top 1% of all garbage men in the world, you're making a ton of cash. Most people think that being a garbage man is a bad business, but they're wrong. Being in the top 1% of any industry is how to get paid. Sure, it might be harder to get to the top 1% in an industry that is saturated, like the coffee shop business. And you should pick a platform in which many people can find success. But the best of the best is always going to dominate, regardless. The problem is that most people never strive to get to the top 1%. They may start in the bottom 99% and work their way up to the middle 50%. This is where the bills get paid. So they stop skilling up. Ask yourself, who are you reading? Who are you listening to? Who are you watching? How much time do you spend on learning as opposed to on mind-numbing activities? The higher your skill level, the more dramatically your money situation will improve. What's your superpower? I want you to sit down with five game facers whose opinion you value. You're going to ask them and yourself, that's right, write down your own answers, big questions to help you understand what you're good at and therefore what business you should be in. Bonus points if they are financially where you want to be. Allowing yourself to be open to feedback from your friends, family, co-workers, and even perfect strangers is vital to understanding where you are currently. In each of these conversations, ask, what do they and you see as your strengths and weaknesses? What kinds of skills are you great at? What industry or career path do they see you thriving in? What kinds of questions or problems would they come to you with? What expertise of yours do they value? What do they think you do at an exceptional level? Getting better at your superpower. It has never been easier to develop your skills. You can learn anything you want for free. It's called YouTube. If I had walked by my receptionist and she had been on YouTube watching videos about truckers so she'd have something to talk to clients about when they call on the phone, I'd applaud her effort in skilling up. Hell, if she was on YouTube learning how to play piano, I would have been excited for her. I would have said, good for you, and shame on me for not keeping you busier. So what are some of the ways that you can skill up? Here is my 5-step program. 1. What do you like? Don't start with learning things that you don't like. The key here is to develop the desire to become a master at just a few things, so that you have the confidence to become a master all of your life. And you won't stick with something long enough to achieve mastery unless you enjoy it. Lifelong learners lead interesting lives and develop mastery that lets them make the most money. 2, what value can you bring to the organization at all times? Ask yourself, what is your company not doing that you think it should be doing? How can you fill your time with activity that helps the company fill in this gap? This puts you in the driver's seat. If you become the in-house expert on how to do what your company is not doing, you become much more valuable, and then you can leverage that value for a pay raise. 3, no white space on your calendar. If your workday opens with white space, giving you lots of downtime, you need to fill in those gaps on your calendar with learning opportunities. Think of it like this. If you're feeling sick and you call your doctor and your doctor says, "We have no appointments today. Choose whenever you'd like to come in," then you should probably find a different doctor. When you fill up your calendar, you will radically change your income situation because some of the wealthiest people I know are also the busiest people I know. I'm not talking about creating busy work for yourself. I'm talking about making sure you are using every minute of every day to get closer to your lifestyle by design. Scheduling meetings with mentors, learning new skills, selling more product, even spending quiet time visualizing your success and lifestyle by design. It all goes into filling up your calendar, and it's all important to helping you make more money. As Mark Cuban said, "When I became a billionaire, I thought I would have more free time. The reality is, I've never been busier." Whether you use a physical calendar, Google Calendar, or Outlook, just start filling in those blank spaces. 4, every skill has inherent value. If you learn to play piano, that can make you better at business. How? Because piano or guitar or flute is a new language. And learning new languages opens up new doors in your brain for communication. So, if you're in business, but you teach yourself how to play piano, I bet you'll be a better communicator. I know for damn sure that you'll be more interesting at the next Christmas party. Among all your other responsibilities, you've learned to play piano and can bust out some Billy Joel Piano Man. Keep learning and doing the things you love, besides learning the specific skills you need to advance at work. These not only make your life better, but you never know how they may help you at your current job and open up opportunities to make more money. And it also makes you more interesting, which brings me to my next point. 5, become a person of interest. Quote, "Interesting people do interesting things." Jim Rohn. I love this quote from Jim Rohn because it's 100% true. Learn to do something that makes you interesting. Why? You'll find that the easiest way to open doors, make connections, and have opportunities come to you is to be interesting. When you're introduced to people you want to meet, you'll want to have more to talk about than how business is going. Being a person of interest is easy. 1, do stuff that is interesting to you. Complete a triathlon. Volunteer to coach or mentor kids in your community. Ride a bike across the country. Play Rachmaninoff Concerto No. 3 on the piano. Write a book. Do whatever floats your boat, but do something cool and interesting and different. Number two, have a bio. You need a quick one paragraph to one page bio of yourself that highlights your unique attributes. Where you grew up, your career story, your superpower, and some of the interesting things you have done should all be in it. If you're having trouble writing about yourself, just get someone to write your bio for you. An easy place to get this done is www.fiverr.com. For $5 to $10, you can find someone who will write it for you. Just send them the bullet points of what makes you interesting, and they will write a beautiful bio about you. Number three, get your bio seen online. When someone types your name into Google, they need to find something. Something about you must pop up, and the more they can find, the better. It has never been easier to control this result. The search engine bots, computer programs designed to find relevant search results, as they are called for Google, Bing, Yahoo, etc., crave content. So give it to them and put your best foot forward. One of the best and easiest ways to make this happen is by simply posting your bio to LinkedIn. It takes 1 minute. In short order, it will be found by the search engines, and it will start showing up anytime someone types your name into Google. The power of nights and weekends. The workday is for you to be doing whatever it is you do to earn a living. You are doing what you have to do to keep your job, or if you are in business for yourself, to guide and support your people, make calls, lead meetings, sell your product or service, and pay your bills. Most competent people can get through this part just fine. What separates the experts from the amateurs is how you spend your nights and weekends. While your pals are all cutting out at 5 p.m. and binge-watching Netflix, you need to be doing the exact opposite. Nights and weekends are your time to pounce. It's your time to get ahead, to learn, to prepare, and to make more money. Nights and weekends are for massive focus, focus that separates you from the others. It is the time for you to do what others won't do. I tell new salespeople in my office that it is mathematically impossible for them to work as many Saturdays and Sundays as I have, because I have worked so many weekends over the past 22 years that even if they worked every day until the end of their career, they still wouldn't catch up to me. I already have and will continue to work more Saturdays and Sundays. I'm interested in getting ahead in life. I don't want average or normal or middle of the road. I spent way too much of my life thinking that way. I want more. I want the same for you. The ability to put in the extra time to watch, listen, learn, read, and think is the reason why successful people are successful. People who put in the minimum effort from 9 to 5 don't get ahead. They sit in the parking lot for one last smoke and open the door to the office with no time to spare. They leave for lunch right at noon and return just before 1 p.m. They start packing up their desk at 4:30 so they can hit the exit when the clock strikes 5. Fridays are the start of the weekend for them. What a joke. Don't be surprised when doing the bare minimum gets you the bare minimum. What happens on nights and weekends makes the difference between the winners and the losers in the game of finances, and here's why. My customers are working during the day, so they don't want to take sales calls during that time. However, they are available to take a 7 p.m. sales call. They'll take my call at 7 a.m. or 9 a.m. on a Saturday, or 8:30 a.m. before church on a Sunday. Early mornings, evenings, and weekends are not just important in communicating with a client, but they're also important in strategizing your individual plan. Action steps. Make better use of your time. Late nights and weekends are for preparation and skilling up. As I said before, it is not your employer's responsibility to help you skill up. If you are lucky enough to work for an employer who pays for your schooling or on-the-job training, congratulations. Jump on that benefit. But no matter who pays for it, you still need to put in the extra time to skill up. Here are my suggestions on how to use late nights and weekends to make more money. Number one, make more sales calls. Some people feel hesitant about making calls before or after business hours, but the calls you make during these off hours can be the most effective. Getting on the phone earlier and later will help you get in touch with that prospect who is too busy during the normal day to speak to you. Another added benefit to making these calls outside of normal working hours is that you bypass the gatekeeper. The executive assistant who is blocking you from the CEO isn't there at 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. That creates opportunity for you to make a direct impression on the person you want to do business with. Make the most important calls when your chances of getting through cleanly are maximized. Number two, get organized. We all spend so much time getting caught up in the day-to-day of whatever it is we do. Most of the time we are wrapped up in reaction mode, answering emails, responding to crises, and putting out fires. Late nights and weekends help us organize our activities and focus on doing meaningful, impactful work, which is what ultimately makes us more money. Number three, make connections. Invite people to coffee or lunch to get to know them better. Use late nights and weekends as a time to get your personal brand popping on social media and connect to influencers by liking and sharing their content. Number four, get better at your superpower. This bears repeating again here. Watch videos, read books, and practice to increase your skills. Who is already great at what you can be great at? What do they do? How do they do it? Are there tools they use or created that can help you? Number five, just think. Our days tend to get so busy that they don't leave us with much time to just pull back and think. Use late nights and weekends to also just put your feet up and dream. These quiet moments are great moments for this type of thinking. I'm often caught up in running my business, but for many years now, I've made it a practice to take 5 or 10 minutes out of my day to close the door to my office, sit in my chair, put my feet up, and stare at the ceiling. It's my quiet time, and it lowers my blood pressure. This is usually the time when I'm able to see the answer to a problem I've been trying to solve, instead of constantly pushing against a rock. Sometimes you have to take a step back from the frantic pace of your day to be able to see the forest for the trees. Number six, fill the calendar. I need to make a point of taking time out of my day to think because I fill the rest of my day with structured and productive activities. Chances are that you have way too much free time you could be using to make more money. If you actually pull out your calendar and fill in your time slots, you will quickly see how much free time you actually have. You need only 6 to 8 hours of sleep per night. That leaves 16 to 18 hours a day to get busy. Not just a little busy, I'm talking about filling the calendar up. Number seven, set your goals again and often. Goals matter. It's tough to set goals once you're in the middle of a busy workday, so you need to dedicate time outside your workday to focus on goal setting. Take some time on Sunday night to set your goals for the week. Come in early every morning before work to set your daily goals before the emails start coming in. Write your goals down on paper and keep them in front of your face at all times. Use the time during your nights and weekends to stay laser focused on achieving them. Chapter 8, step number 5, time for a raise, how to get more money from your current job. More value equals a raise. If you're working for an employer right now, you're either more valuable to your company than you're getting paid for, or you should be looking to bring more value so that you deserve to get paid more. It's time for a raise. Even if you've decided that you want to quit and create your own business, which we'll get into in the next chapter, you're not going to, and shouldn't, quit your job cold turkey. So it's still important to learn how to maximize your money making at your primary job until you can get things going. When it comes to creating value, you have an advantage over your boss and other higher-ups. You are the one on the front lines, and the front lines are where the action is. You know the problems in your department. You see them before your boss does, and often more clearly. This gives you an opportunity to be a proactive problem solver. Act as if you have an antenna on your head, constantly looking for problems. Key point here, you are not looking for problems to whine about. You are looking for problems that you can solve. You are now a professional problem solver, and in quick order, you will start to earn more money. Take this example from General Electric, GE. In the 1950s, GE created Crotonville on a gorgeous mountaintop about an hour's drive north of New York City. Crotonville is where GE brings their best and brightest to train and get better. It has long been considered GE's secret weapon. During one of the working sessions at Crotonville, a factory worker for GE was in the audience. As management presented the complex problem of the day, all the top brass worked back and forth on the whiteboard. They dissected the problem and attempted to find solutions for an issue within one of their manufacturing plants, but couldn't make much headway. Finally, near the end of the session, the factory worker raised his hand and said, "You guys don't know what you're talking about. I deal with this problem every day. Let me show you how to fix this." With that, he went to the whiteboard, and within minutes, he outlined the solution that the top brass couldn't figure out. He knew the problem backward and forward because he had to deal with it every day. Because of this, he also knew how to solve the problem and was ready with the solution. You have the same power. Don't wait for your higher-ups to fix anything. Screw the organizational chart, the traditional hierarchy. The quickest way to get noticed in your organization is to identify and solve problems. And problem solvers always get paid more than people who just ignore or gripe about their problems. Be on the lookout for unique problems. If something within your department is broken, be the fixer. Create a plan to solve this problem. Create a presentation that outlines this problem, the reason the problem should be solved, and the expected outcome once it is solved. Then ask for a meeting with your boss to present your findings and your solution. This presentation should be done with the utmost professionalism. It could be one of the biggest presentations of your life, so don't take it lightly. Do your research and analysis and knock it out of the park. Have booklets, or PowerPoints, or graphs, or testimonials, or data, whatever you need to show that you have taken the time to figure it out. Then dress for success and present it. An important note here, make your boss look good. You might even need to allow your boss to take the credit for it, but you and she will know whose idea it was, and you can leverage that in the very near future when you ask for your raise. Getting recognized for your worth. Whether you've decided you're better off as an employee or an employer based on your lifestyle by design, the foundational principles of success are the same either way. Number one, you need to prove your value to the marketplace at all times. You must do more than is expected of you from either your boss or your clients. If you do this consistently, your income will grow. And if you don't, you will get your ass handed to you. Number two, you must sell yourself. You make your own breaks. Don't wait. Push for opportunities at all times. You might think that this will rub your boss the wrong way. Too bad. You are in charge of you, and self-promotion is important. Hell, if you don't promote yourself, why would you expect anyone else to promote you? Feel good about yourself and sell the hell out of yourself every chance you get. The squeaky wheel does get the grease. Number three, don't assume, ask. Never make the assumption that your boss or your clients know what you want. They don't. You know what they want? What they want. Not what you want. They're not thinking of you. They're thinking of themselves. So don't assume that your raise or that your new batch of business will come to you from them. You must ask for it, and you must ask for it often. Number four, be ready or don't ask. Are you ready for the next level, or are you just a pain in my neck? If you come to me for a raise, you better be prepared. Have your act together and be like a rocket ship ready to blast off. If you come to me dressed sloppily, without a presentation that includes data in support of your request, you will not get what you want. Getting to the next level financially requires you to play at an entirely new level. Get paid today. My inability to understand how to value my services, communicate my value, and actually move the needle of my net worth plagued me during the early years of my business. Don't let it happen to you. You must get paid for your services. The reality is that very rarely will people want to pay you what you are worth. That is just the fact of business. Once again, that is not the fault of the marketplace. It is your fault. If you don't get paid properly, that is your issue, just as it was mine. But you can quickly fix this situation and consistently get paid what you deserve and more by doing these things. Research. Understand the market and the pricing structure of competitors. You might also need to do a cost-benefit analysis if you're selling a physical product that takes a certain amount of money and time to create. Now you have an idea of what you need to charge, either for your services like hourly or per project, or for the product. Negotiate. If you're in a situation where the price is negotiable, really push for your worth. Speak up. Don't just let the other side bully you and get what they want. Know, going in, what your minimum is and what you're willing to give in on. Maybe you're willing to take a lower price to work with a special client because they're a charity or can create other opportunities for you. Factor in all of that when you negotiate. Payment terms. Make sure you don't complete a deal without fully understanding the payment structure. Do you get paid 50% upfront and 50% when the job is done? Is it a weekly payment schedule? How many days do they have to pay you? Will they be penalized if they pay you late? Know before you go. Make sure all of this is decided before you start work. Do the research and analysis. You don't want any surprises on game day. The point is to recognize this epidemic of not getting paid what you're worth and to do something about it. Prove your value. As an employer of people within $100 million plus business, I'm focused on growth at all times. Because of my focus at all times, I neglect the compensation of people within my organization. I wish it was different and that I was alone in this, but it is not. And I am not. At the end of the day, I'm interested in building a great company that is indestructible because of the business practices we have and the amount of cash we have stuffed in the coffers. That is my job. Your job is to make me notice you. It is also to make sure that I pay you what you are worth. That is not my job. It is yours. Here's what I mean. I hired Jason, a 22-year-old kid with no college background and virtually no business experience at all. But I saw something within him during the interview process. This kid had a great can-do attitude. He wanted a shot, someone to believe in him and show him the ropes. He reminded me of myself in a way. We needed someone in our documentation department, so I offered him that job. The pay was $30,000 and he could take it or leave it. He took it and never negotiated for $1 more. This turned out to be a smart move on his part because I thought I got a good deal, and he realized that he could only go up. Jason would prepare the loan documents for customers to sign, and when the deal flow was slow, Jason would come into my office and ask, "What is the biggest problem I can help you with this week, boss?" "Anything. Throw it at me, and let me do my best to solve it for you." At first, I would give him small tasks that I couldn't care less about. "Go organize the storage closet," I would say. And he would say with an ear-to-ear smile, "It shall be done, boss." And sure as shit, when his department was slow, he would go into that storage closet and start organizing, cleaning, and tossing the junk. He would spend about 30 minutes each day doing this side job. And when it was done, he swung by my office to let me know it was done, and he asked me to inspect it for my approval. His work was good, both as a documentation specialist and as a storage room organizer. He immediately asked for another project, and I found something to give him. He would always have an extra side project in the works with me, something above and beyond his primary job. He simply took care of things that needed to be done at a level that required little supervision and didn't distract him or anyone else from their primary job. So when he asked for a raise, it was a no-brainer for both of us. He quickly started earning another couple dollars an hour. Peanuts for me, but to him it was a significant raise. This process of Jason asking to help solve my problems happened almost weekly. Soon, I wasn't giving him any direction. He was identifying and solving problems I didn't even realize existed. He was taking the bull by the horns and just getting it done. He brought me a new version of our company newsletter, which was so good I approved it immediately. He arranged for me to be interviewed by a major trade magazine, a great opportunity to promote our business. He started promoting our financing specials on all of our social media platforms, as well as engaging with prospective clients who wanted to buy equipment, which I found truly impressive. It was all well done, and it exceeded my expectations. Sure as hell, 60 days later, he came into my office and told me that our newsletter and the social media effort had generated 8 new deals for us. Our average deal size is $50,000, so his little newsletter project had generated $400,000 worth of new business for us. I will never forget what he said. "What a great idea you had, boss. This newsletter was really a hit. I'm so glad you gave me the opportunity to carry out your idea and generate us $400,000 worth of new deals." This kid was smooth. So smooth that he got another raise. And after about 6 months with us, he was earning $36,000 per year, which was a $6,000 or 20% raise in 6 months. And all because he had asked for responsibility, got it, did the work above expectations, and reminded me of the value that his work brought to the company. Shortly after the success of his newsletter, he took over our social media efforts, without my asking him to. The next thing I knew, we had our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn popping. I bet you can guess what happened next. Into my office came Jason with reports of the social media success stories we had. Before his 1-year anniversary, Jason was earning $48,000, which was $18,000 over his starting salary. In a world where many people get 3% annual raises from their employer, Jason had earned a 60% raise because of a great attitude, asking for more responsibility, proving that he had brought value to the organization, and then leveraging it by asking for a raise. By the end of year 2, he had continued to find ways to provide more value without anyone asking him to. He was so ahead of me and so in charge of his movement and future that I wasn't able to keep up with him. So many employees move slower than management, just following orders and waiting for more instruction, but not Jason. He was always a step ahead, creating value for us and value for him because of his pace. At the end of his 2nd year, he had taken charge of our marketing efforts and was earning $65,000 per year. Think about that. Within 2 years, he had earned $35,000 more than when he started. At 24, with no college degree or prior business experience, he was earning $65,000 and earning more than his father. If you do the math on this, his annual raises were over 50% each year. Although Jason's efforts were paying for themselves, he reached his compensation cap. $65,000 was the top of the pay scale for his position within my company. When I mentioned this to him during his last raise discussion, he said he understood. 30 days later, he put in his resignation. He thanked me for the amazing opportunity I provided him, but he wanted to continue his income-earning path, and he had accepted a marketing job at another company for $75,000 a year. Last I heard, he was earning $150,000 as the head of marketing for a small tech company. All this before he turned 30. That's the power of attitude, gratitude, asking for responsibility, creating value, exceeding expectations, and leveraging it all for more money. Jason had a knack for making sure that I was made aware of the value he brought to me and my company. It was like clockwork every 60 days. He would request a meeting with me to discuss his compensation and leave my office with a raise. Why give it to him? At each meeting, he showed me the value he was bringing to my company and proving his indisputable worth to me. It's not that hard to do what Jason did and dramatically ramp up your earning. All you have to do is commit now to putting in focus and effort to finding new value inside your career. Stop waiting for someone to tell you to solve problems and just start solving them. He did what you need to do. You need to understand what value you bring to the organization, bring it at a level that is exceptional, far above what is expected, and then leverage it for more money. One last point. When it comes to producing exceptional value, keep it real at all times. I get such a kick out of seeing the amount of bullshit people feed their brains. So many of us compare our successes downward, looking at the success or failure of someone who has not achieved what we want to achieve and using that as our goal line. This process allows us to feel good about ourselves because we did better than a loser. It is the exact opposite of what we need to do. Never compare yourself down. Always compare yourself up. Multiply your value with social media. The internet and social media are filled with posers, phonies, and fakes. But that is not you. By now you know your strengths. You have taken one or two of them and turned them into a superpower. Now you have the makings of an exceptional and interesting personal brand. And it's time to get it out there. If you don't have a personal brand, regardless of whether you're an employer or an employee, in today's marketplace, you are costing yourself, your family, and your organization money. The reason is that a personal brand helps bring value to your company. I'm not talking about just having and running a Twitter and Facebook page because you feel like you have to. I'm talking about using this to your advantage in a concrete way. Think about it like this. If you solve a problem for your boss or develop expertise in a new field, you only create value for your boss and your company. But if you then also share your solution or your expertise on social media, you create value for hundreds, maybe thousands of others. This helps you get noticed as a problem solver and helps you move up and make more money. You are far more valuable with an audience because an audience amplifies your value and travels with you. And you can end up getting paid more because of that audience. I fought against this idea for way too long in my career, thinking the way to get ahead was by just putting my head down and quietly doing the work. Now I realize how much money it costs me. At my company, we have a CFF morning scrum every day. It is a 10-minute all-staff meeting in which we discuss successes of the previous day and what we are working on for today. We often play a quick motivational video to get the group fired up as well. During one of our morning scrums in 2013, I made a now infamous statement to my entire company. Mark my words, social media will go down as the biggest waste of time in the history of business. Boy, was I wrong. I looked at social media and everything at that time in terms of return on investment, ROI, completely missing the two most important reasons of why social media is so important. Number one, it's free. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, and YouTube cost nothing, zero. In the old days, if you wanted to build a brand, to be seen and to attract and build an audience, you had to take out radio ads, television commercials, or maybe even billboards on the highway. The cost was immense and prohibitive for most people in small businesses. Today, you can create an account on any of these platforms in about 2 minutes. Number two, your story. Everyone has a story, and there is an audience for every story. People are attracted to your business when they know your story. The marketplace loves stories. The rags to riches story, the hero's journey story, the triumph over evil story. However you frame your own story, stories are interesting and valuable and far more effective than mission statements or empty promises. Your